Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
Hey, happy Monday. Welcome on into the show as I'm just throwing things all over on my desk, losing a hard drive and all that. But hey, that's live streaming for you. Welcome on into the Brad Sesmat Show. I'm Jordan Spurgeon, your host this week. Brad's still out taking care of things, so he'll be back next week. But until then, there's just so much to get into. Of course, we'll talk about the NFL draft, a little bit about the Suns and the Diamondbacks. So plenty to talk about on today's show. Later on, Daniel the Draftnik will join us, and then John Wilner as well. Plenty going on, a new Pac-12 logo, Big 12 draft stuff, and so much more. But as always, we're brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial, taking care of you, taking care of your business. As always, we appreciate their support. Super excited to see Jeff Mishi and others tomorrow, too. We're going out to Phoenix Children's Hospital, a cool little project that Desert Financial has worked on over the years. So myself and Claudia Collins and Brad and others are going to go check it out. And I'm really looking forward to that. The impact that Desert Financial has on our community, it really goes without saying. They are one of the pillars of this community, and we're just excited to see kind of an inside look tomorrow at what they do as we work on a future project down the road. But that's all I'll say on that for now. So the NFL draft was this past weekend, and there's lots of things to talk about. What I want to start with is the fact that we had so many local products get picked. ASU had two first-round picks. Arizona's entire secondary got picked, including two guys, Traydon Stukes and Genesis Smith, who played their high school ball out here. We saw other guys as well who played high school football in the area as well get drafted. And it's just cool. It's one of the best parts of draft day. And you can find all of that content on our YouTube page. We've got highlight videos. I think the one blowing up the most right now, Jacoby Lane. He had some of my favorite catches ever. He's a Red Mountain High School alum. He just makes acrobatic catches pretty much every time I watched him play in high school. That's all he did. It's some of my favorite highlights I've ever shot. You can find some of that over on our YouTube. But he got drafted by the Ravens, and that's a guy, I said it before the draft, is going to be a sneaky good draft pick, and that's a great fit for him. Lamar Jackson's offense, it's a new team this year with a new coach. You throw in Jacoby Lane up there, catch all the 50-50 balls that Lamar Jackson can throw to him. That's going to be super fun to watch. So that's one of the coolest parts about the draft. Now, the other part of the draft, of course, here locally is the Arizona Cardinals. And what are they doing? So they draft Jeremiah Love, third overall. And I'm not going to knock the pick at all. He was the best player on the board. It was too high of a spot to go offensive line. You kind of addressed it a little bit in free agency. You had a chance to get a guy in Chase Basantis in the second round to kind of fill in the interior of the offensive line. So you go for the best player available, and you get a running back who has the potential to be a 1,200-yard-plus guy every single season he performs, and he's healthy. Will he remain healthy behind an offensive line that stays sort of banged up? You can't really predict that, but he's got the kind of talent that a Bijan Robinson had coming out, a local product from here as well, the same kind of talent as a Saquon Barkley coming out a few years ago. So he's a guy that's going to be exciting. He's going to put butts in seats. I know some fans don't want to say that, and the Cardinals will deny that's why they drafted him, but it's true. He's going to sell tickets. He's going to sell jerseys. You already saw the family living up to the name, holding up the heart signs when they're doing their intro press conference, and so they're going to just go all in on it, and I respect it. I respect it. I don't think that's an issue at all. The rest of the draft, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about it later with Daniel the Draftnik. You know, maybe some disappointing picks, but you can't really grade drafts early on. One of the biggest things I hate with NFL draft coverage is here's everybody's draft grades one day after the draft. These guys haven't even gone to rookie minicamp. They haven't stepped on a field. Wait a couple of years. You can grade the drafts 2, 3, 4 years down the road. There's no reason to judge too much right now on, well, they reached too high for this guy, like people are saying about Carson Beck. Look, they wanted to get a quarterback in this draft. There's going to be more options next year, but it's not always a guarantee. You know, last year people thought this was going to be a very strong quarterback class with 5 or 6 guys taken in the first round, and you ended up with 2 guys in the first round. The second guy, Ty Simpson, many thought that was a reach at 13 for the LA Rams and thought he should have been a second rounder. So you really don't know. These quarterbacks that you think are going to continue to develop, they might not develop, or they might have injuries or things happen. So I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, there's going to be so many more options next year, because there might not be. And Carson Beck's a guy that has played a lot of college football at Georgia and then Miami. He got to a CFP national championship game this year. So there's a lot to be said about them taking a flyer on him. Jacoby Brissett, Gardner Minshew, they're not exciting players. They're not guys that are going to bring any sort of juice to the Cardinals. So why not give Beck a shot at some point this year and see what he has? And sure, if he's middle of the road and doesn't get the job done, guess what? You could draft a quarterback again next year. I think the perfect example of doing this is the New Orleans Saints. A couple years ago, they take Spencer Rattler in the second round. They give him a little bit of shot. They're not quite sold. So the next year, they draft Tyler Shuck, who also, by the way, from Arizona, as well as Spencer Rattler. Just had to continue to shout out the local guys. And then Tyler Shuck goes out and puts on a Rookie of the Year performance this year. And maybe he's the guy for the future. Maybe this year's a fluke. He played a lot of college football, just like Carson Beck has done at this point. So it's worth taking a flyer, and it's worth doing it multiple years in a row, because once you find the guy, everything else kind of comes into place. So that's what I got on the draft. We'll get to Daniel the Draft Nick later on to talk about that. Let's see. What else do we got today? The Arizona Diamondbacks, that's who I want to talk about right now. They're sitting at 15-12. They had a cool series in Mexico, a two-game set. Both games home games, by the way, which I'm not going to be the person to sit here and complain about that, but the fact that you're going to Mexico City, you lose two home games out of it, and there's no ABS, there's all kinds of things wrong with it. It's different, but the atmosphere is fun. It's helping grow the global game. And they went 1-1 against the Padres, who are the leaders in the NL West right now in the division. So to take a game, especially that second game where they were down by 7 runs, and to come back and have a grand slam and do what they did to come back and win that game 12-7, that's impressive. I wrote about it last week when the homestand started for the Arizona Diamondbacks, but if they can sit in that 3 to 5 games above 500 all the way through the All-Star break, they're going to be in good position. AJ Puck's going to come back probably some point at the end of May, early June. Corbin Burnes will be back by the All-Star break. Justin Martinez, if they're hanging around, will be there by August. So they've got reinforcements coming, and there's still potential to make trades. But the fact that this team is just staying scrappy and staying right around 3 games above 500, you can't complain about that, Diamondbacks fans. You got to be excited about this team, because that's a team that's showing heart. And as more talent comes back in and gets ready and gets seasoned for the season, this is a team that can be sneaky at the end of the year, get hot, get into the playoffs. And we all know what can happen if you just get in. So that's my talk on the Diamondbacks. I'm not going to be a guy breaking them down game to game, because, again, they're going to blow some games. The bullpen, while improved, still is a struggle. The starters were really great to start the year and have sort of regressed a little bit. So I'm interested to see what happens over the next month. Will these guys in the rotation continue to improve? Or will that decline set in? Because if the decline sets in, that's when the season could get off the rails. And the offense truly hasn't even gotten going yet. So there's a lot to like about this Arizona Diamondbacks team being where they are despite a lot of obstacles at this point. Last thing before I turn it on over to our first commercial break, the Phoenix Suns against the Oklahoma City Thunder. A sweep is inevitable. The Thunder are the best team in the NBA. They're going to go back-to-back most likely. And the Suns, you know, they're a gritty team that's given it their all this season. If you said before the season they'd be in the playoffs, you would have been happy with that. And I know it's disappointing because of how hot the start was, and it's disappointing because Devin Booker has not looked the same so far this postseason as he has in previous ones. But the Suns, for the second time in 2 straight playoff years, are going to be swept in the first round. And that's something that's going to leave, you know, a notch off Booker's legacy. That's what it's going to be. People are going to judge Booker for being swept in the first round twice in his last 2 playoff appearances. That's how it works. Sweeps look terrible on any NBA star's resumes. And he is a star. He might not be a superstar right now like he was a couple years ago, but he is a star player. And he is playing banged up. Not giving him an excuse, but he is playing banged up and out of position. So I don't know what else to say about the Suns. You know, they've had chances this year to improve, and they have. So going out in the playoffs, swept by Oklahoma City Thunder, yeah, it's going to leave a sour taste in a lot of fans' mouth, but it's still a successful season. I'm not that guy trying to play eternal optimist, but when you look at it from a wide scope, it is a successful season. If they can continue to build off of that, they'll be just fine next year. But that's all I've got for now. After the break, we'll have Daniel the Draft Nick joining us talking all about the 2026 NFL Draft. As promised, Daniel Rios joining me now. Daniel the Draft Nick, as you know, I'm on our platforms. Former intern doing great things now, all over in media, but especially around the draft. This past weekend, you were out at Harris Auction Casino for draft night round one with Brad Sesmat and Brian Urlacher. So what was your record this year with picks? I know last year you were insane with it, but this year it seems like you got a lot right again, right?
Yeah, last year we went 25 out of 32, and I counted it up. If we want to be nice to me, it's 22 out of 32 this year, but yeah. I did go between 2 players in 1 pick, and I ended up getting it wrong. So I'll say 21 out of 32 to be modest.
Okay, you're being modest there, but that's still really impressive. And I know everyone out there was excited to be out there. Just being able to cover the draft in that space and you know, be on a show like that with a guy like Seth Mad and who's whatever, and Brian Urlacher, an NFL legend. What was it like for you?
Man, it's always a blast. It was the second year doing it. I just love, you know, just being able to kind of sit there and just talk football with a Hall of Famer. It's kind of fun to do it. You know, you don't get that opportunity to do it too many times, but this draft was a fun one going into it. So I knew it was going to be a lot of conversation, a lot of storylines heading in. So it's just fun. You just get to talk football in a chilled environment. It's, you know, what more can you ask for?
Yeah, especially after, I'm sure, weeks and months of prep and learning the class and all of that, of course. So diving into the draft now, we'll start locally here at the Arizona Cardinals before taking a look at just the draft as a whole. When you look at this class, we know Jeremiah Love, obviously the headliner, Carson Beck getting a quarterback, always going to make a statement for a team. But when you look at this draft as a whole, is it kind of what you expected from this team going in? Was it a little bit different? How do you see this Cardinals draft class?
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit lower on it than I kind of coming out of it. And it's not because of their first two round picks. I just really, you know, I hate to bash classes when they haven't even taken the field yet. I think that's definitely a little, you know, too early, but I just didn't like what they really did in rounds 3 and 7. Now getting to Jeremiah Love, I know it was a very controversial pick. We get the positional value, but in this draft, I generally don't think it matters because positional value was already screwed up in this entire class. And I look at this, I said it on stage there. I look at how the Raiders attacked it last year. You get Ashton Jeanty, and now when you add Fernando Mendoza a year later, now the outlook is, hey, we have Jeanty, we have Bowers, we have a new offensive coach. Like, you know, it looks a little bit more up, and the running game can take the pressure off of a young quarterback. We all anticipate them to go quarterback next year. So you look at the offense a year from now, you get year two of Jeremiah Love, Trey McBride, Michael Wilson. You have Chase Bisontas, who'll be a second-year starter. So I kind of look at that upside a little bit. Looking at the Carson Beck pick, it was way too early for me, but I kind of look at how the quarterbacks were falling, and I felt like they needed, you know, they kind of knew that they had to take Beck there. He's a scheme fit for them, so it's not the worst decision in the world. But then, you know, the later picks, I'm not that high on Caleb Proctor or Reggie Virgil. Now, they're later round picks, so how much impact will they make in 2026? It's kind of, you know, lesser impact, so it's not that big of a deal. But, you know, I think a lot of people bash them for the Jeremiah Love pick, but I can kind of see the upside in it.
Yeah, and I think what you said early on there is important too, because that's why I didn't ask what are your grades, because I think it's the, one of the dumbest things in the draft scene. I think we're not going to know grades, you know, for two or 3 years at least, sometimes not even till year five when you see if guys are getting their first round contract, getting that fifth year option renewed and stuff like that. So don't want to give out grades there. But when you look at, you know, making the decision to stay at three and draft Jeremiah Love, typically running backs don't go there. But like you said, it seems like this is a good fit for them because of what it can offer them flexibility wise going into next year.
Yeah, 100%. You hit it. It's just the flexibility. You just have a weapon like that. He was a lot of people's number one overall player. So, like, how are we getting mad at a team for taking our number one rated player at number three overall? Like, that's just kind of where I lose people a little bit. And I just look at it like, I think he was a better prospect than Jeanty last year. And I think it may be early, obviously, but I generally have him in conversations with Bijan and Saquon Barkley. Now, do I have him better as those players? No, but I think he's, you know, warranted a conversation. So I just look at it. You know, you have a new young offensive coach. You've got to give him weapons to make the offense look good so fans don't, you know, get too upset in year one. But I generally think it was a good pick. Maybe unless they got a, you know, an insane offer to move back. It doesn't look like they did. Obviously, that's why they stayed and picked. I could have warranted a trade back, but I just look at the talent. I just look at you can always get offensive linemen throughout the process. They attacked it. They got Chase Bisontas. And, you know, Paris Johnson still is a good left tackle. I think he's developed into something really well. So I think a lot of people should be excited about this Cardinals offense.
Yeah. I think last thing there then. So you mentioned Carson Beck being sort of a fit for what Mike LaFleur wants to do in this offense. So we've seen it a couple times now. There's a lot of teams that take those flyers on quarterbacks. You know, the Saints do it back-to-back years. They take Spencer Rattler, then Tyler Shuck. And Shuck ends up at this point, I know it's only 1 year, it looks like he's hit for them. So there are times where you take a flyer on a guy, not really expecting him to become the guy, but he gets that opportunity. He comes in this year. Let's say he comes out and plays midway through the year and wins a few games. There's going to be conversations about, do we even need to take a quarterback? Or he can still play well, and you can still be like, hey, we have a top 10 pick. We're taking a quarterback next year. So when you look at that pick, it doesn't seem like, even though it was a reach, doesn't seem like it was a bad idea, though.
Yeah, 100%. It's you just got to get a younger guy in the building to get fans a little bit more excited, in my opinion, as well. Because you look at it, like, I just, there's just no point in fielding out Jacoby Brissett and Gardner Minshew for an entire 17-game season. Like, you got to get someone in there that has a little bit of upside. So that's why, as much as I think it was a reach and as much as I didn't like it, like, it makes sense for a team building and in the future aspect, because now, potentially, when you get into maybe, you know, Jacoby Brissett, Gardner Minshew, maybe they win a couple more games than we anticipated. I talked to Brad a little bit about this, and maybe Brissett, maybe Beck even comes out and plays good. There's no guarantee you're going to have that top five pick to get a quarterback next year. So it's always good to be ahead of it a little bit and get ahead of that need. So, and, you know, Brad always brings up Brock Purdy. No one expected him to, you know, obviously be that guy, but it's, the NFL is so unpredictable. So maybe Beck does come out and thrive in this LaFleur system.
Yeah. Looking at just the draft as a whole, I just want a couple questions here. You know, again, I'm not a big draft grades guy, but when you look at a team or two and you say, wow, they've got some guys that I did not think they'd be able to get, who are those teams?
The first team, it's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I gave them credit throughout the entire process. I was really high on Reuben Bain, and they need an edge rusher really bad. You could just sit there in the first round and just get him at number 15 overall. Like, that's a steal for me. You look back to the rest of their draft. You get a guy like Josiah Trotter in the second round. I was really high on him. You got, you know, Lavonte David retires. You're able to replace that need. And this is the process. They traded back in the third round. They got a very big physical receiver in Ted Hurst, who some people may know, Georgia State guy, 6'4", played really well at the Senior Bowl. Lower school, obviously, going to Georgia State, but I think could really be something. And then round four kind of capped it off for me. They got Keontae Scott, defensive back out of Miami. I mean, he is just a downhill guy. He's small, but he's going to make sure that you feel him. Him and Reuben Bain basically were a two-man rushing defense by themselves for the Miami Hurricanes. So I'm really excited that they're able to end up in Tampa Bay. In terms of another draft I really liked, it definitely was the Colts. They didn't have a first-round pick, but Chris Ballard basically just took best player available throughout the entire process. Was able to get C.J. Allen in round two, A.J. Halsey, the safety out of LSU in round three. So I thought they really attacked it. They got Deion Burks, the slot receiver out of Oklahoma, who I can't believe he fell to the seventh round, but he did. So I think they just got really good value throughout the process. And even not having a first-round pick, they got a ton of starters in this draft.
Yeah. Is there a player or two that, as you were kind of prepping for this draft, that was really, you know, under the radar for a lot of guys, and you saw him get drafted by a team and you go, oh, yeah, that's going to hit somewhere. He's gonna have a good career from that.
Yeah, it was Chris Johnson, the San Diego State cornerback, who went in the first round. So many people were low on him throughout the process. Then for some reason, like a week before the draft, it's like, oh, he can go in the first round. And I'm like, damn it. Like, I was like, this is like my sleeper. But he's a guy who plays a bunch of zone coverage at San Diego State. Jeff Hafley, their new head coach, he plays a ton of zone coverage in Green Bay. So you can anticipate he'll do it in Miami. I think it's just a tremendous scheme fit. And despite playing the lesser competition, I generally just don't think it matters. I think Johnson's going to ball out this year for the Dolphins.
Awesome. Well, Daniel, I appreciate the time. Thank you so much for joining me, and we'll be right back after this timeout.
Thanks for having me, Jordan.
And joining me now, John Wilner from Wilner Hotline, and we're going to get right into it, John. The NFL draft just happened this past weekend, and, you know, I did see some of your tweets and some of your posts this week, and it was a big one for the Big 12 in more ways than one. So when you just talk about, you know, what this weekend meant for the Big 12, what do you mean by that?
Well, I feel like there is a connection between what happens in the draft and what happens during the season and the narratives that emerge about each of the different conferences and their relative strengths and weaknesses, you know, top heavy, light at the top, strong in the middle, that kind of thing. And in my view, the Big 12 has kind of been creeping toward a little bit of an image problem, right? It's the only power conference that hadn't put an at-large team in the playoff the last 2 years. It's the only power conference team that hadn't won a game in the playoff. Meanwhile, the ACC had a team in the championship game. And then you add last year when the Big 12 didn't have a very good draft, right? I think we had 31 players, fewest of the Power Four. So you could see how this would kind of build a little bit to the fact to people kind of concluding, you know what, maybe it's not even as good as the ACC. Maybe it is clearly fourth of four. So what happened this over the weekend in Pittsburgh, I think, was important because the Big 12 had six first round picks. It had 38 total picks, the same as the ACC. It was kind of a reminder, hey, we got good football. We got good football players. And that, I think, will help it through the course of next season when you know, the talking heads on the media and people on social media are talking about, is the Big 12 good? Well, it can point to, hey, we just had 6 first-round picks, 38 total. It kind of lends a foundation of competitive support that I think the conference has kind of needed after what's happened in the last 2 years.
And even here locally, it looked like, you know, Arizona and Arizona State had big times in the draft. Arizona had basically their entire secondary drafted, ASU, 2 first-round draft picks for the first time in a long time. A couple other guys going late, some undrafted signings as well. Seeing those two schools kind of get recognized in the draft this year. Because ASU, as a team that was in the playoff 2 years ago, didn't have many guys drafted especially high last year. But because they were so young, those draft picks finally hit this year.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're Dillingham or Brennan, it couldn't have gone much better. Right. ASU, 2 first rounders for the first time since, I think, 2001. Mm-hmm. And also when you add on Scadaboo in the 25 draft, you know, Dillingham is painting a clear picture that he could sell not only recruits, high school recruits, but also transfers. Look, we will develop you into NFL draft picks. Mm-hmm. And that is serving them well. I think that getting Omarion Miller from Colorado is a direct reflection of what they did with Jordan Tyson, right? So then in Tucson, it's kind of the same thing. It's a different narrative, but it's the same theme. Brent Brennan can say, look, we just had, was it 4 or 5? I think 4 defensive backs picked, you know, plus they had at least 1 picked up in free agency. So they could sell, you know, recruits, look, we're going to develop you. And, hey, we're DBU, right? It always helps to have a brand. And Arizona, given its rich heritage of defensive backs, I mean, going back to, you know, Antoine Kayson and Daryl Lewis, Chris McAllister, and then you add on these guys, they can sell themselves as DBU. And I'll tell you what, there's very few positions that are more important in today's game than defensive backs. So, for both coaches and both programs, the draft went very, very well.
Yeah, I think that's kind of fun. You know, Arizona State, it can kind of be the West Coast wide receiver U. I know they're not on the level of Ohio State, LSU, but they have a track record recently.
They do.
In Tucson, so that's kind of cool, wide receiver.
But just Dillingham's consistent success finding guys who are slightly under-recruited, whether not as coveted on the transfer market and making it, turning them into draft picks, you know, and look, even Sam Levitt is going to be look good for Dillingham, you know, next season in terms of being able to sell him as a developer of talent.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, something fun I saw this morning, Wilner, the Pac-12 has a new logo. Thoughts on that? Yeah. Your early thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a visual guy, right? I don't know the ins and outs of marketing and marks and logos. It's a little different. I mean, I do think it strikes the right balance. It's not a complete overhaul. It's a little different, right? And that's what they want to tell people. Look,
right,
we are different, but it's still, there is a lot of the old Pac-12 in us in terms of, you know, what we want to sell as a brand, right? They don't want to completely diss the former Pac-12 brand because it's got a lot of value, but they're also a little something new. And you can tell getting rid of the shield does kind of tell you, look, there's no boundaries now, right? But in terms of some of the detail, like the boldness of the lines and the particular things they built into it, I don't know enough to get into all the details, but I think it looks pretty good, and it serves the purpose, right? They couldn't have the exact same thing because it's not the exact same conference.
Right. Absolutely. No, that's, you know, I appreciate the breakdown. I'm, you know, someone that doesn't know design that well either. It is a good sign to see that they are trying to push forward and keep things alive.
Yeah.
No, that's happening. A lot of people still believe, oh, the Pac-12 is dead. It's gone. Deceased, and that's just not the case. And bringing this forward is going to kind of help rejuvenate that, right?
That's their plan. That's their plan. Don't completely abandon the past, but kind of embrace the new version of the conference.
Yeah, I guess sort of last thing that I want to dive into here. So here in Scottsdale, you have some meetings between some of the conferences. It's a little bit different than what it used to be, right? So what exactly is going on down here?
Well, it used to be the giant Fiesta Frolic, I think they called it, right? And every conference would parachute in with all their coaches and ADs and all the TV networks, right? And it was a huge deal. And business got done in Scottsdale in early May. That has kind of dissipated, right? And now I know the Pac-12's got meetings this week. Mountain West has got meetings this week. But, you know, you're not going to see the big conferences, right? I mean, the Big Ten is in L.A. in a couple of weeks. The Big 12 is in Frisco at the end of the month. The SEC does their deal in Destin. So you don't have the Power Four, but you do have the Pac-12 and the Mountain West, and there might be a couple other leagues gathering in Phoenix. And a lot of it is to, you know, to kind of get ready for what's coming next. They talk to both, you know, there's athletic directors and coaches along with conference staff. So, and for both the Pac-12 and the Mountain West, since they have new members, you know, these off seasons are actually pretty important for those two conferences. So I don't think we'll see huge news from either of those conferences this week in Scottsdale, but there's something going on. It's kind of like the old Pac-12. It's not like, or the new Pac-12. It's not like what it used to be, but it's still, you know, relevant. And that's kind of like the meetings in Scottsdale, not what they used to be with everybody, but still relevant.
Absolutely. Well, your stuff's still relevant over here, Wilner. We're excited to see what else you got cooking up in the next few days. So we appreciate the time today and all your coverage as always. So have a good one, John.
Thanks very much, Jordan.